This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, we have an open line right now for you at 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, what are our topics this time?
Yes, exercise may help preserve your memory, especially if you're older. Now, older is a good relative term, but what does exercise have to do with memory? We will talk about that. And while we're on the topic of good health, we're going to talk about fish. Fish, not just fish oil, but fish. How do we get more in the American diet and what we are lacking?
Mm-hmm. Not a fishy recipe this time.
No, German cabbage soup. Now, the Germans, on the whole, are not noted for their Epicurean taste. However, this German cabbage soup, which, as you know, is a recipe from the vault.
That's right.
The vault is really a dynamite hearty soup, something you ought to consider.
Yeah, since it's from the vault, you listeners will be able to state the ingredients right along with Zorba.
Absolutely. People memorize every recipe we send out.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Let's get to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Bloomington, Indiana. Hi.
Hello. I was calling today because I have was diagnosed 14 months ago with a pinched nerve in my back.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been living with it and kind of dealing with the pain, but I haven't really found anything that really takes care of it. And I wondered if you had any advice about going forward and what can be done with pinched nerves.
Yeah, this is 14 months ago. Do you know how you got the pinched nerve?
Well, I work as a remodeling carpenter,
mm-hmm.
and it could have been, you know, lifting something heavy, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the most likely thing is moving something that was probably just too much. And since then, I've been kind of scaling back about off the heavy work and just doing lighter work as much as possible.
Got it. Lighter work, hard to do in your profession.
Yeah, I would like just advice about going forward if there's anything that I could do that's
more permanent. Oh, sure. Back pain is a huge issue.
Yeah.
You know, huge issue in America. If we look at the number one cause of disability, you know, there's a discussion whether or not it's carpal tunnel syndrome or back pain. If we become a more service society, carpal tunnel wins. And when we become a less service-oriented society, back pain appears to win. And it is a big, giant issue. A couple of questions. So there was no injury that did this, right? It just sort of came out of the blue?
Yeah, pretty much. At first I thought it was possibly computer-related.
Okay.
But I've kind of ruled that out, that it's not. I had been using, you know, one of those new tablet computers a little bit and thought it might have been in my hand.
Uh-huh.
But since then, even when I don't use the computer, it doesn't really matter.
Well, you bring up an interesting point about the computer. I recently came back from a service trek that I did in Nepal and Tibet, and I had no pain at all walking for nearly 3 weeks on rough ground with sticks. Came home, sat at my computer, and all of a sudden it was, ouch, the back is starting to hurt again. And I realized, you know, this is a way that you can be sitting. And a lot of back pain has to do with how we sit, how we don't move, but how we actually sit. But getting back to this, does it go down the back of the leg, go to the foot at all? Or?
No, it basically travels from the top of my back.
Okay.
But it'll radiate down my right arm all the way to my fingertips.
So it's really more upper back than lower back.
Yeah.
Okay, more upper back than lower back that you have. Exercises, yoga, physical therapy?
Stretching and you know, I don't do yoga, but just general stretching exercises.
Okay.
Actually, my wife was just trying to get me to do yoga.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you know, sometimes the little ladies can be right. If my wife hears that term, she definitely will turn around. She'll roll over and say, "What is going on, little lady?" But yoga can be quite useful. So here's the skinny. Here's the problem. It's very clear that medically we don't know what causes a lot of back pain. It's not just architecture. It appears to be sometimes the superficial nerves can make a big difference and cause pain that's going on. And one recommendation you may want to consider is having some, if you can pinpoint the pain, are there any spots that tend to bother you in the upper back?
Yeah.
Have you been injected with steroids into those spots?
No.
I would recommend considering that.
Okay.
What I would recommend is talk to your family doctor or somebody else who does injections. These are injections of superficial nerves with steroids. And sometimes one or two or three injections can get that nerve to settle down. And the nerve can sometimes become entrapped, so it keeps on firing. And it becomes entrapped because here it is. You lifted something heavy, a little blood vessel broke, and a little blood vessel produces then a little clot. And as the clot is sort of resolved in the body, sometimes that will pinch these superficial nerves and bang, you get pain forever and ever and ever. And I mention this because these entrapment syndromes can be very, very problematic. I'll give you a perfect example. I have a patient who had a back surgery that was 5 hours long, and her superficial femoral nerve, which is this little nerve that comes out, became entrapped, and the back pain went away from her surgery, but this other pain overcame that back pain, and it took several injections before that got to settle down. So these entrapment syndromes are quite common. I would recommend you try that injection, number one. And number two, I would recommend that you follow the advice of your wife and just look at yoga. Because
okay.
That would be another thing. So, good luck. Thank you so much for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, appreciate it.
You know, immediately when you say injections, some people say, good, I'd like to try that. Other people go, well, it's a needle. I'm not sure I want to try it. And mm-hmm. then they worry about the steroid that's being injected. And sometimes it's just a small little dose of steroid with a numbing solution such as xylocaine that can make a huge difference in people who have back pain where you can actually localize it to a point that is reproducible.
Mm-hmm. So. 800-462-7413 if you'd like to talk with Zorba. We go to City Point, Wisconsin now. Zorba, hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I've had this issue with my nose about the last 2 months. My left nostril has gotten this sore on the inside, and it scabs over. And I looked on the internet to see if I could find anything on it, and I found a couple of posts where people put Carmex on it. So I started putting Carmex on the inside of my nostril, the left nostril. It's only the left nostril, and it would soften it up and help for a little while, but it keeps coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know what's going on.
Let me tell you one issue that I think you ought to consider. We now know that probably 5 or 10% or more of the population carries staph chronically in their nose.
Hmm.
Most people are not affected by it. They're infected and they're carriers, but they're not affected by it. Big issue if you work in a surgery suite and you have...
You know what? I work at an assisted living facility.
Oh, you see. So that can fit with this. And a lot of the staph is actually MRSA staph. And if you work at an assisted living, you know that MRSA turns out to be an issue, which is called methicillin-resistant staph aureus. But it's a type of staph that's an issue. Now, the treatment for this actually is using a medication, which is a prescription ointment and cream, comes in an ointment and cream form called Amusopurosin. It's under the name brand Bactrobam, Bactrobam.
Okay.
But it's now a generic by prescription, and you put it in your nose twice a day, and some people do it for 5 or 10 days. Some people actually put it in chronically. That may be what you have. You may want to go to your doc, have a culture made to see indeed if that's an infection or not. But sometimes docs will look in the nose and say, yeah, it looks like an infection, and give you this cream. Antibiotic cream you can buy over-the-counter, triple antibiotic cream or bacitracin. Works, doesn't work as well, doesn't work nearly as well. That's what this sounds like to me. It sounds like
You know, it just came on when I started that job.
Oh,
came on like 2 months after I started that job.
Yeah, it sounds like that. I think I would get a culture in that case. I think I'd also bring it up to your supervisor,
mm-hmm.
Only because since it came on when you started the job, mm-hmm. this may be a workman's comp issue. It might not be a workman's comp issue, but I think I'd bring it up to your supervisor. Certainly, if it turns out to be the MRSA, it's called MRSA staph.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, so it may be MRSA staph. You're going to want to bring it on, and you're going to want to get rid of it. Now, you don't actually ever get rid of this if you're in a carrier state. Some people just have this staph that's in their nose. It's colonized. Once again, it doesn't cause a problem unless in your case it may cause a problem. So get it cultured, try the cream, and see what works.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Have
we appreciate
day.
The call. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Well, what is it we were going to talk about?
Wait a second. Are you an older adult? What's an older adult?
There was a topic that you
What's said. An older adult? I have to tell you, I was watching...
Well, I qualified.
I was watching David Letterman the other day, and there was this kid on whose name I don't remember. He's a 16-year-old star, and he was talking about his age, and and Dave said, you know, is he an older guy or a younger guy? He said, well, he's older. And Dave said, how old is he? He said, he's like 29. Then he said, oh, no, he's 28. He doesn't want to be 29. And I thought, 28 or 29? And this...
So whatever this topic, let's talk about it.
Well, this has to do with patients that are often in their 60s and 70s. And we know that exercise is important. We know that it really does make a difference. And this is an article published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, very prestigious journal. The only articles that get published there are articles that are well-controlled.
Yeah, we should say we're talking about memory. Here.
That's right. We're talking about memory and the importance. Now, what happens is there's something called the hippocampus. And the hippocampus is in part of the brain. And it has to do with memory and the ability to engage in executive function along with memory. And hippocampal volume, in other words, the volume of this on MRI scans, which was really what they were looking at. And the theory is that as you get older and your memory gets worse, it may have to do with a dysfunction in the hippocampus. Mm-hmm. That's it. And lo and behold, they discovered that if you engaged in regular exercise in the 60s, that the volume of the hippocampus, this part of the brain that's very important in memory, appears to be not only preserved but may actually increase. Hmm. In other words, they looked at 120 men and women in their 60s randomly assigned to aerobic walk 3 times a week. The others were not assigned to do anything other than stretch classes. And the study showed that the walkers had a 2% increase in the volume of the hippocampus compared to the stretchers, the people who engaged in just stretching activity. They lost 1.4% of the volume of the hippocampus. So I think once again, we're not exactly sure where the hippocampus fits. We know that it's important with memory. Yeah. It's obviously not the only thing that's important, but it just shows you how important it is to exercise.
What do you think's going on? Is blood flow to the brain that might do
that? If you go to the gym and you exercise your muscles get bigger, right?
Yeah.
Let's look at it from that point of view. Maybe the same thing is happening in the brain. Now, I'm not saying your brain is going to swell and get larger in your head, but this may be also a volume issue. We don't quite understand where memory and function is, but we know the hippocampus is important. If the volume increases, it may be that you're actually preserving memory from exercise. Yeah. And we don't naturally engage in exercise as we get older because we're sloths and it's so easy not to do anything.
And yet another good reason to exercise.
Right, to exercise. Yeah. Now, and this is the right type of exercise. This was aerobic exercise. So, I think when you're thinking about your exercise program, and when I say your, I mean, yours, Tom, my exercise, and others, it's a combination of three things. It's stretching to make sure your joints stay as supple as they can. Mm-hmm. It's strengthening to make sure you don't fall and you can engage in normal function.
Because, and go to the beach.
And go to the beach. Charles Atlas, go to the beach. Because nobody will kick sand in your face at the beach. Oh, there's always a joke. And aerobics. So I think it's all three.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in Houston, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I am 30 years old, and I am going through my third dental implant in 3 years. I grind my teeth and have so since I was a child, but I also have a family history of immune deficiency diseases.
What is it that happened to the tooth so that you needed the implant? Did it decay or what?
Right, yeah. So I would get an abscess or something along those lines, and I would have multiple root canals, which is not very fun, on the teeth. And then maybe within 2-3 months or a year after the multiple root canals, the tooth was still not still not able to be saved, and then I'd have to just go through the extraction and dental implant process.
Sounds awful.
Oh, it's a, you know, and whenever we think about teeth and dentistry, because the trigeminal nerve, the nerve that basically feeds our head, is highly represented in the brain, and any kind of pain and discomfort we have is just awful, awful type pain. I feel for your pain.
It's not fun.
I feel for your pain. Well, it makes you wonder. There are a lot of things that go into tooth problems. We know that the incorporation of fluoride into the tooth, especially as it develops as a child, does reduce tooth decay. We know that. The feds have recently looked at the fluoride and said, because we're getting a lot of it from toothpaste and mouthwashes, we should reduce the amount of fluoridation in water. That's the first change they've done in maybe 3 or 4 decades. So the right amount of fluoride is important. You can't do anything about that now. We know that good tooth care, which means, you know, flossing, water pick, I assume you're doing that, brushing with an electric toothbrush. Are those?
I'm very diligent with my teeth.
I mean, I assume once you've had a root canal, you become more diligent, kind of by definition. Now, let's get back to the grinding. You take anything when you go to bed at night?
No, I wear a mouth guard.
You wear a mouth guard. One of the recommendations, let's look at the grinding for just a second, is that you may want to take something that will reduce your sort of desire to grind your teeth. And there's a drug called gabapentin, G-A-B-A-P-E-N-T-I-N, gabapentin, which is used for neuropathic pain. And it's a very interesting drug. It's a seizure drug. It's in common use for a lot of people who have neuropathic pain, nerves that are sort of firing erratically. And it's a great drug for sleep. It's sedating, but it's not habit-forming. And you may want to consider getting that from your doctor, maybe a 300-milligram dose. Most people can tolerate that. That may help your sleep, and you may grind less. It's the grinding. Even if you've got a mouth guard, it might be that a better night's sleep is going to help her because it just might be an issue. Autoimmune disease. I haven't seen anything about autoimmune disease in teeth. Now, we don't really understand a lot of issues that come to do with gums. But the tooth itself, if you're having trouble and the tooth is cracking, my guess is this may have occurred somewhere either during your childhood, you know, when your secondary teeth were actually developing. And that may have been a deficiency due to fluoride or other things. So I would hit what you can do. I would be absolutely diligent what you're doing with making sure that your teeth and gums are well. I would consider trying to reduce any possibility of grinding by using the mouth guard, by taking something to sleep at night. And those are about where my recommendations would be.
Okay, I'll give it a try. Yeah.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Please let us know what happens.
Thank you.
And thank you for the call. Zorba, let's step over to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox now and see if we can help out one of our listeners named Caleb, who's having some trouble with his feet. Caleb writes, "Dear Doc, Zorba Pastor, for years now, I've suffered with a recurring case of athlete's foot. I've tried over-the-counter creams, foot powders, sprays, body powders to dry the foot, diet changes, and natural cures, foot salt water, soaks, garlic paste, even chili powder. Don't ask me why. I work long 10-hour shifts in boots. But on my days off, I tried to let my feet breathe as much as possible. I'm always careful to wash my feet completely, including between the toes. I even try to swim in a chlorinated pool as much as I can during the warmer months. No matter what I try, it just comes back time and time again. Is there any advice or suggestion on the best way to get rid of this thing?"
Oh, this person has tried everything.
Yeah.
Absolutely everything that's there. So, I've got a couple suggestions.
Oh,
hey,
good.
I always have suggestions.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what the topic is. The thing with athlete's foot are two things. It's a fungal infection, basically. Mm-hmm. This fungi are always around. They grow in moisture. So everything that he basically seems to be doing is to try to decrease the moisture. I would suggest he try Dry Sol, D-R-I-S-O-L. Got to get it by a prescription. It is a super antiperspirant, if you will. It's an aluminum product, far greater than you can do if you were to spray Right Guard deodorant on your feet. And I would use Dry Sol. According to the directions on the bottle, it'll reduce the sweating dramatically. So chemically, I would add Dry Sol to this. The second thing I would do is I would look at an athletic sock that is two-layered, or I would double sock with athletic socks that wick moisture away from you when you're exercising. So he might be using the wrong socks. And I would try initially, as I said, either one with a double layer or I would double sock with that. And I would change my socks once or twice during the workday. You can't just wear it for 10 hours because your feet are going to be too moist. So reduction of the moisture can make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. That's my suggestion.
Well, if you need us to help you kick your lifestyle problem, just send us your question in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around. The recipe is coming up next. More of your phone calls, some more interesting research to talk over, our medical myth buster. So many reasons. You're going to want to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That phone number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, recipe time. And today we're going to highlight a past favorite for another installment of our popular segment, Recipes from the Vault.
Ooh.
Marlene from St. Louis, Missouri, put in a request for today's recipe, writing, "Dear Dr. Zorba, years ago, my grandmother and I overheard a recipe you gave for cabbage soup. She made it once, and we loved it. Neither of us wrote it down, and I don't want to leave anything out. It had cabbage, lean ground beef, and dill. That's all I can remember, except the wonderful taste." Well, Marlene, the recipe you're looking for is German cabbage soup. Here it is for you one more time, and because we know you don't have the combination to our recipe vault, we'll post this reprised version on our website.
Combination to the recipe
vault.
Well,
yeah.
Well, the vault is big, you know, and it's heavy. We want to make sure that no one who doesn't have access, access that's predetermined can actually get into our vault.
So. Exactly. So let's do this one.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk a little bit about cabbage and Germans. Mm-hmm. We happen to be in Wisconsin, which is really has a German heritage right. as a state. And the Germans are really not noted for their cuisine. Now, some will argue with me that they really are, and they are. Bratwurst and other things, to me, are really quite tasty. But, you know, often when I think of great cuisines of the world, I don't necessarily think of that. But cabbage has a long-standing important history because it contains lots of vitamin C. And, in fact, the British were able to basically get rid of scurvy on their ships back in the 1700s because they were able to take cabbage, which they basically made into what we would now call sauerkraut. And on the ship, every single day, everyone had to eat a little bit of that because of the huge amounts of vitamin C that are present in cabbage. So I think this is a marvelous, hearty soup. And what I like about looking at recipes are really to think about soups that are soups and other recipes that are different that you've never tried. But it's sometimes great to go back to old favorites. And this was a recipe that I really enjoyed.
So let's do it.
Okay, so you can start out, and I'm also going to give a vegetarian equivalent of this when we're done.
Okay.
But a 1/2 pound of lean ground beef.
Half a pound lean ground
That's
beef.
Right. And lean, of course, is important. One medium onion.
A medium onion.
And you can make that a red onion if you want to. Red onion will be nice because it'll add some color to the soup. And sometimes
is there any difference in taste?
I've never noticed a difference. Some onions are more pungent than others. There's no doubt about it. And I like Vidalia onions on my burger in the summer I'm cooking.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a soup or anything like that, I don't think there's really any difference at all. You find any difference?
I don't think so.
You know, and I eat onions all the time. I love onions. Can't imagine life without onions.
I eat them whenever I can get away with it. My wife lets me know right after I've eaten
that's
one.
That's right. Actually, the same thing in my house. If you're eating onions, I love onions. 1 1/2 cups of red cabbage chopped.
1 1/2 cups red cabbage chopped.
That's right. You don't have to use red cabbage, but once again, it's a color issue. Cuisine often has color.
Yeah.
3 cups of low-sodium beef broth.
3 cups of low-sodium beef broth.
And I've gone to all those sodium products when it comes to soups. We don't need the salt. We should have less salt. And Consumer Reports did an interesting, or Cooks Illustrated, rather, did an interesting taste test on low-sodium broths and found out they had more taste in them.
Now, you've mentioned that. Yeah. I don't find that to be the case. I don't have it very often, but when I've had it, it doesn't taste so good.
Well, if you you mean when you have broth that
when
is
I have
low
the low sodium, low sodium. I'll make a mistake and get that instead of the good salted kind.
The good salted kind. Moving on.
Yeah.
2 cups of water.
2 cups of water.
Okay. Half cup of spätzle.
What's that?
Well, or a spätzle. And I think it's called spätzle or spätzle.
We'll find
out. I wonder if anyone will find out. Yeah. I bet we will. They're the pronunciation police.
What is it?
Pasta, a little pasta.
Oh, okay.
It's a German pasta. You don't have to use that. You could use macaroni, but macaroni is Italian. This is a German dish.
Yeah.
You're not going to use an Italian pasta with a German dish. That would be the wrong thing to do. A teaspoon of white vinegar.
Little tea, white vinegar.
That's right. If you've got wine vinegar, that'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Teaspoon of dill weed.
1 little tea dill weed.
Essential. Can't make it without dill weed. Yeah. Half teaspoon of celery salt.
Half a little tea celery
and then
seed.
Then you're going to have some salt and pepper to taste.
Okay.
So brown the beef in a large skillet. Make sure you remove the oil. So what I do when I brown beef is I take the beef, I brown it, I remove it from the pan, I throw out the oil, and then I reuse whatever I'm going to do back in the pan. Otherwise, you're going to get a lot of oil that you do not need from that beef. Then you're going to add onion to that. Mm-hmm. Once again, you may have to put in a tiny bit of olive oil, vegetable oil, and the cabbage, and saute it until the cabbage begins to wilt, stirring constantly so it doesn't stick. Then remove it from the heat. Then carefully pour the beef and cabbage mixture into a medium soup pot. Add the beef broth and water. Bring it to a boil. After a boil, add the spätzle, vinegar, dill weed, celery salt. Boil for 6 to 8 minutes until the spätzle is soft. Reduce the heat. Simmer another 10 minutes. Serve it hot with a little salt and pepper to taste if you want to. And some people like to put a little dollop of low-fat sour cream over the top.
Okay.
It's really a good dish.
So what's the veggie version?
Well, if you want to do the vegetarian, first of all, you'd use a veggie broth, always low sodium for the veggie broth. Believe me, huge difference. Cost more of a vegetable broth, I think, is loaded with salt, most veggie broth. Omit the beef and just not put the beef in there, but you may use about 1/4 cup of soy-textured protein instead of the beef. And these textured protein products are really very good. They're made of soy, and they have a texture of beef. I don't really think of them as artificial beef, but they add texture to the soup. And that way you would be able to do this in a veggie version.
Isn't that called tofu, what you were just
saying? No, well, it's from soy, but it doesn't taste like tofu. Tofu has a – well, you know what tofu tastes like, Tom. You have it every day for lunch, so you know exactly what it tastes like. It is not like the jello-y taste of tofu, but it's soy, so it comes from the same spot.
Okay. Well, if there's a recipe you forgot to jot down or just feel needs a second run in the spotlight, let us know about it, and it might just end up being our next recipe from the vault. Simply send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Frankfort, Michigan. Hi.
Hello there.
How can we help?
Well, my blood pressure seems to be very high in the morning, and it's normal to low in the daytime. And I just turned 72. And I'm a ski instructor, and I teach probably up to 6 hours a day, 5 days a week skiing.
Wow.
So wait, so you're 72, you're a ski instructor,
yeah.
Which means you are in good shape. Yeah. And you're on blood pressure pills or not?
Well, my doctor has recommended that, but I'm thinking that, you know, half the time I'm not high.
Yeah, that's right. No, and that's not unusual. Most heart attacks occur between 6 o'clock in the morning and 9 o'clock in the morning when our body is waking up. And our blood pressure is generally pretty low when we're sleeping. I mean, it's lower than it normally is during the daytime. And in the process of our brains waking up, the limbic system sort of waking up our brains, waking up our body, getting our body kind of going, our pressure tends to be higher. It is higher in the morning. And the data clearly shows that the best, most accurate blood pressures are actually those morning blood pressures. Because exercise reduces it. And like you say, you get up, you move around, you're a ski instructor, and the pressure goes down. You could look at this as two thoughts on this, but I don't think there is. I think the data clearly show that since we have been aggressive on the treatment of high blood pressure, we have reduced stroke by about 70% in the last three decades. That is a huge drop. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're 72. You might remember that years ago, stroke was really common. There were stroke wards in the hospital. Do you remember that when you were younger? Mm-hmm.
No, I've always been pretty healthy.
Oh, well, there were stroke wards in the hospital. When I was a medical student, I remember one floor of Mercy Hospital in Chicago were just post-stroke patients. And although there are rehab facilities for strokes, we've dropped it by 70%. Why? Because we treat the highest blood pressure in the morning. And the reason why your doctor recommended it is that's probably a good idea. Now, can you treat it naturally? Yeah, there are a few things you can do. Number one, do you salt your food?
Not very much.
So remove all the salt in your diet. See if you're salt sensitive. Go to as low a salt diet as you can. Measure your blood pressure. Get a good machine. I would recommend an Omron. I think it's Omron, O-M-R-O-N. And if you look at it on, we'll have that on the website, the name of that machine, because it's certified. It works really well. They cost about $60. You can measure your blood pressure accurately with this machine. And stop salting your diet for a couple weeks. See if you're salt sensitive. Only about 25% of hypertensives, will that really make a difference? The second thing is alcohol. Do you drink at all?
Hardly ever.
So, that's hard to remove. If people drink one or two drinks a day, I'll say stop it for 2 weeks. See what that does. And the third thing is weight and exercise. You're obviously engaged in exercise. What's your weight? Is your weight pretty good?
Yeah, I'm 145 and I'm 5'5". I used to be 5'6".
Yeah, that's one of those things that happens in life.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. I used to have a lot of hair on my head. Anyway, so what I would do the alcohol. You know, you're already there. What I would do is I would do the salt and see what happens. If you continue to have high blood pressure in the morning, my recommendation is take the pill. And the reason is the data clearly shows that. And then I've got other people who say to me, well, wait a minute, I don't mind dying. If I get a heart attack and I'm dead, that's the way to go. And I go, yeah, you dying is dying, but strokes are awful.
Yeah.
They're awful, and you don't need
them. Well, I've got to ask you, I don't want to be ageist. In fact, I don't have any right to be ageist, but at 72, are you slowing down a little on the slopes? I mean, do you go to the bottom until they go up there and come on down, and I'll let you know what you did wrong?
No, actually, I've upped the game. I'm racing with NASCAR this year.
Oh, cool. Oh, that is cool. That is great. Well, I think you're doing a wonderful thing. And at 72, way to go. Keep it up. In terms of your lifestyle, it sounds like you just have high blood pressure. And 95% of the people 70 years old and older have high blood pressure. It's 95%. It's a big rate. You know, it comes with the territory.
Okay.
Take care. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Before the break, Zorba, let's log in to the Zorba Pasture and Your Health inbox and see if we can help out Amanda from Knoxville, Tennessee. Amanda is a nursing student who's hitting a hurdle in her studies. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I find that concentrating, even for short periods of time, is difficult for me. I do try to go to a quiet place to study, which helps, but I often find my mind trailing off after just a few minutes of reading. I have to force myself to refocus and struggle the entire study session to pull myself back into the material. I've been wondering about nutritional supplements like Focus Factor and trying to find practices or habits that will improve my concentration. I would love to hear what you have to say about it.
And I've got to say, Zorba, what she describes is pretty much my 17 years of education.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm sitting here thinking, this sounds very, very familiar. Mind wandering, looking out the window.
My fantasy life is always so much more interesting than the reality of that topic, subject, whatever it
is. That's right. That's exactly what it is. You know, this is a complex issue. Yeah. This is not a simple issue. First thing I tell people if they're there, get rid of all the inebriants in your life. That may be an issue. You may smoke weed once or twice a week. That can really affect your function for the entire week. You may drink a drink or two of alcohol during there. Get rid of all the inebriants in your life. Second thing is that the most common thing to get people to concentrate is caffeine. And over-the-counter supplements to get you to concentrate are generally caffeine. That's what they do. And sometimes caffeine, especially on an empty stomach, best way to take it in the morning, helps people concentrate. That's why people have coffee in the morning. It goes into their stomach and they're able to concentrate and do things. So that's another issue. Going to study, going and learning better study habits can be a difference. For some people, they learn by listening. Other people learn by reading. I never learned by listening. I learned by reading or writing things down. So that's another cue. And finally, if that fails, she may want to talk to her doctor about getting tested for ADD, attention deficit disorder. A number of adults have it, and look at some of the stimulants that are used, Adderall or Concerta, which are stimulants that are used for ADD. But to do that, you have to have a physician, you have to be tested, and then you have to have a trial to see whether or not that works. So I hope those are some points that may help her concentrate in class so she doesn't do what Tom and I did, which was look out the window and fantasize.
Well, she's doing the right thing about getting a quiet place and not having
Absolutely. But it's a complicated. There's no simple fix for this.
Yeah.
And this is a huge problem with adults who I have people who come to me at least once a day in my office and they go, I'm having trouble concentrating. What shall I do? And the answer is it's a complex series of issues, but often you can improve your state.
Interesting. Let us concentrate on your lifestyle problems. Just send them along to us in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, Zorba has another interesting topic to talk over. More of your calls coming up, of course. We have our medical myth buster as well, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 800-462-7413, and we have a line open for you right now. But before we get back to the phone, Zorba, most of us don't eat enough fish.
That's right. Now, when my mother prepared fish, when I had fish as a child, what did your mother feed you when you had fish?
For fish?
Yeah. Sticks.
Nada.
Didn't you do sticks?
No,
fish sticks?
No.
She didn't do fish sticks?
We had healthy diet, but no fish.
Well, we had fish sticks.
Fish
that was
sticks.
The, we had
That's
fish.
Not a healthy
it
diet.
It is not healthy. Yeah. I'd have fish sticks, Mrs. Grass's or something, fish sticks. And then if I didn't have that, we would have smelt, frozen smelt that my father would catch. It was awful. And then we'd have lox, which was great. And that was about all that we ate. So a lot of people in America do not eat fish, among other things, because they were ruined by their mothers, like I was, and didn't have the right fish.
Yeah.
And when we look at fish and the reduction of heart disease, when we look at the Mediterranean countries where they consume much more fish, we think that part of the reason is because of the oil, the fish oil that's in fish. And generally, what you really need is at least 4 to 8 ounces or even more a week of fish. And it's trying to eat fish twice a week that you like. It can be tuna fish or salmon or so on. Now, if we look at salmon that really has the best fish oil possible. It doesn't matter how you eat it, but it has lots of omega-3 fatty acids. And if you have 3 or 4 ounces of salmon twice a week, that'll make a huge difference in fish. And we look at Americans, it's only about 20% of Americans to 25% of Americans that are basically getting enough fish.
Yeah, I don't eat enough fish at all.
So do you eat fish at all?
Some, but not nowhere near enough.
Do you like salmon?
Salmon's okay. Yeah, my wife eats salmon a lot and likes salmon a lot. I think it's okay. What I really like, and we have a joint in the neighborhood that's a New Orleans place. I love blackened catfish or blackened redfish.
It's wonderful. It's
Why don't I go and get it and eat it?
Why don't you get it for lunch instead of having a burger for lunch?
Let me write that down.
You know, I think so. Write that down. Eat more fish. Write it down and do it. But, you know, part of this is habit. It's not just taste. It's the fact that we don't think of it in a habit way of I'm going to have fish twice a week. I mean, we often think of going to the gym. We think about getting enough water. Americans are always worried about more water, but we haven't put fish into the diet and mainstream. So you've got a good example of once a week maybe going there and getting that.
What is it that we're missing if we don't eat enough fish?
Well, it's really the omega-3 fatty acids that are going on with fish that are useful. And some people think you can get it from fish oil, but frankly, the data on fish oil is not as good as the data on fish itself. So my recommendation is whether or not you're putting fish oil into your diet, 1,000 or 2,000 milligrams, you still should consider eating fish twice a week. Find a fish you like. It might be black and red fish. It might be salmon done on a plank. It might be salmon that you get out of a can. It might be tuna. But twice a week, 3.5 to 4 ounces of fish for you to protect your heart.
Toll-free 800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
You know, on the theme of nutrition, I have two quick questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is about an organic diet. My wife is recently pregnant, and when we started to read more about nutrition, it was shocking how much stuff she couldn't and could eat, and we just decided to switch from going from a regular grocery store to our Willie Street Cooperative here in town and eating as much organic as we can. But when you read about it and you ask your doctor, they never can really say, oh, there's conclusive evidence that eating organic is that much better for you, but then they always usually follow it up with, but I eat organic. What are your thoughts on that? And then I just have one other quick question about your thoughts on coconut water.
Well, there is no conclusive evidence. That's 100% correct. And so when we look at organic foods, why do we think organic? Well, we think organic because we don't want to have pesticides and chemicals. And I think there's sort of a general thought in our society that cancer is really coming from the chemicals that we use. Why? Because we've used chemicals that we know cause cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we look at red dye number two, which was put in food, it was stopped many, many years ago because of that. And if we look at chemicals that are used, you know, I think there's a general feeling, even though there's no scientific evidence that food as it's prepared now has cancer-causing agents, we still don't have good scientific proof that that's the case. And so enter the organic movement that has become more and more popular. A lot of people eat kosher foods because they feel that kosher foods are going to be more pure and more useful. But there's no credible good scientific evidence. So I look at it sort of a lifestyle issue. I think that people have a way of saying, look, I want to eat nutritionally well. I feel that organics are good. I want to support that aspect of society. It makes me feel good. That alone might improve your health. Just knowing that you're eating food that is more pure, that may be more locally grown, may help reduce, among other things, stress in your life. And there's no doubt in my mind that stress in your life, too much stress leads to heart attack and strokes. So that's kind of my view of organics. Do I eat organics? I'm kind of mixed on it. I don't necessarily eat organics. But on the other hand, if I buy a free-range chicken and I have a locally grown, you know, organic vegetable that I can get in the summer, can't get it in the winter, because, you know, the veggies are not around in the winter as much that are locally grown, obviously. Mm-hmm. That makes me feel better. That's kind of the way I think about it.
Okay. And my other quick question was about, there's a lot of buzz around coconut water these days as an isotonic beverage. And kind of a replacement for things like Gatorade and all those other things. But have you heard of or have any thoughts on the benefits of coconut water, or do you think it's kind of a fad?
Well, there's no doubt it is a fad. Do you like coconut milk? I mean, that's what I call it, but it is coconut juice. Do you like the taste of that?
With lime, I definitely do, but yeah, when it's not cold and when it's just plain coconut water, not really.
Yeah, and I recently came back from a trip where I had ice cold coconut. The coconut itself was put in ice. They opened it up, and the coconut water was ice cold. It was delicious. But I've had coconut water when it's not ice cold, and it's not delicious. You know, it's a juice. That's what it is. It's no. Is it different than other juices? They're all about the same. Isotonic, which means it's not acid and it's not base. That's basically what it means. So it's I think of it as a neutral fruit-type juice. Is it a fad? Of course it's a fad. In America, we love fads. There's no doubt about it. Is it good? It's like another juice. It's not, you know, highly sugared juice, so it's much better than grape juice that does not have a lot of nutritional value to it and is not nearly as caloric as other juices. So I think it's something you may want to add. Whether or not it has an increased nutritional value over other juices, it's just different. And I think the important thing about fruits and veggies are variety, because they all have different things in them that the others do not have. There's something in coconut water that you can't analyze that simply are the micronutrients of coconut water. So yeah, make it part of your diet if you like the taste of it, and if not, I'd go to something else.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the call. Time once again now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from a listener in Norman, Oklahoma. It has to do with her stomach. She writes, I'm trying to get back in shape after a 3-year period in which I put on 30 pounds. I've heard that in regular exercise, you should give your body a rest at least one of every 7 days, but that you can exercise your stomach muscles every day without a break. Is that true?
Well, first of all, we want to look at why we're exercising. I mean, if you look at all of the abdominal exercise machines that you can see in those infomercials if you happen to be up late at night or early in the morning, everyone wants to get that flat abdomen and wants to do spot reducing of the fat in their area. And the fact is, there is no scientific proof that any of those machines work better from a measurement point of view than plain old ordinary crunches that you do without the machines.
Yeah.
But the problem is, some people are born with more abdominal fat and some people are born with less abdominal fat. And so if you're trying to flatten your stomach, yes, you want to do abdominal crunches to try to get that muscle stronger, but there's no evidence that spot reducing is really going to make a difference.
The question is, can she do them 7 days a week?
Absolutely. There's no good evidence that stopping them for 2 or 3 days a week is going to make a difference.
What about her other point, that other kinds of exercise you should only do 6 days
a week? Well, if you're looking at, for instance, upper body strengthening exercises and you're doing a routine where you're trying to really get those muscles to be much stronger, there's good evidence that doing it every other day will really make a difference, that you've got to give that upper body, you know, a chance to relax. So if you're doing abdominal crunches and you're doing it for 30 minutes, well, in that case, you may want to give yourself a break for the next day. But simply as part of your regular routine, it's fine. It's that when you're doing major strengthening exercises with your upper body, giving it a rest every other day has been shown to really help those muscles recover from the strengthening exercises that you're doing.
Well, if you have a myth you want us to crunch out, send your medical myth to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now back to the phone, Zorba, and a listener in Helena, Montana with us. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a quick question about inflammation. I have Crohn's disease, but I have been in remission for about 10 years. I have been now recently diagnosed with erythema nodosum.
Mm-hmm. Erythema nodosum. Very good. You did a good job, by the way.
I'm trying.
You get an A-, but you did a good job. We'll put you in the A.
Well, I was wondering if there's any alternative to take besides an ibuprofen for the inflammation because of my Crohn's. I haven't been with it, you know, inflamed with my intestines, but I don't want to rock the boat, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of symptoms do you have?
Well, I have the lumps. And I did get the diagnosis, like I said, from the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
They're right now turning kind of between the reddish and purplish stage, and I heard that it can go through different colors.
Uh-huh, that's right. And erythema means color. It means a red color. Nodosum means lumps. How long have you had it for?
It's 2 weeks now.
2 weeks. What'd your doc think it was from?
She didn't say. The only thing she said was some kind of bacteria that got into my body.
Right. It's usually sort of a post-infectious process. It often is self-limiting. These red lumps disappear over time. And what you want to do is you want to take, if you're symptomatic, you either want to take over-the-counter Tylenol, you know, 325-milligram tablets, 1 to 2 tablets, 3 to 4 times a day. Or you want to take ibuprofen. But with Crohn's disease, I'd probably start with the Tylenol first.
Right. And that's why, you know, right now, doctor, that
I have been drinking, I don't know if this is going to be beneficial, but I've been drinking ginger tea, and I've also been putting a topical of the hydrocortisone on
mm-hmm,
them.
Mm-hmm. I think both of those would be fine. The hydrocortisone may reduce some of the symptoms, and the ginger tea is an excellent alternative remedy,
yeah,
often for people who have inflammatory issues. So,
okay,
yeah, those are the things I would think about. I think,
all right.
And once again, this is self-limiting and does get better.
Okay, and I just hope that, yeah, they're ugly. And that's why I said whoever.
They are.
They're just ugly. And
they
it's
are.
Like, oh, I'm glad it's winter. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
You're welcome. Take care.
You yeah, too.
Thank you so much for the call. And before we clock out this week, Zorba, let's try and clear our inbox of one more Zorba Pasture on Your Health grammar police citation. You're being pulled over this week by Deputy Jim from Cedar City, Utah, for what I have to say is, I think, a common grammar crime. Deputy Jim takes issue with your use of the word F-I-L-L-E-T. He writes, I heard your discussion regarding the words fillet and fillet. Note that these are two different words, one spelled with a single L and the other with a double L. F-I-L-E-T, single L, is pronounced filet and is French. It is used almost exclusively with filet mignon and refers to a very choice cut of beef from the loin, as you know. F-I-L-L-E-T, two L's, is pronounced fillet and refers to a strip or compact piece of boneless meat or fish. So, in your discussion of the recipe for salmon, you should have been referring to a fillet of salmon, which would have been pronounced, as I said, fillet.
Oh, that's very interesting. First of all, I never noticed that these are spelled differently. Now,
I didn't either.
That's one of the things I never noticed, but spelling is my weak suit.
Yeah.
I mean, down there.
I think we use the word fillet. Everybody knows,
right,
beef, you know,
yeah,
fillet.
Sure. Yeah.
And we don't
right,
tend to use that F-I-L-L-E-T very, so we
yeah,
just kind of
yeah,
assume.
Well,
that
may be
fillet,
part of it. The other thing is that language, you know, morphs. It changes. And so, you know, often, I mean, as I said, we talked about this because in Canada, they often call it, you know, salmon fillets. And then I've heard it in America, if you're having salmon, you have it filleted, and they call it a fillet. So although this person is technically right
yeah,
from a point of view of definition, I'm not sure if normal parlance, this is actually the way that works. And I don't know if this is a regional English issue. Let's talk about it. In America, we have regional English in North America. So it might be that north of the border, it's really fillet. And south of the border, it's not. And in Wisconsin, we might call them fillets.
Keep on making excuses.
I mean, and I
the time is running out
English,
for the show. You've got to quit making excuses. He says, by the way, anyway, I love the show. Well, if you've had your fill with Zorba's grammar mistakes, then join the Zorba Pastor on your Health Grammar Police. You can do so by sending an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, Wisconsin Public Radio's version of Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next game of Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0212Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.